headed towards him. "What's going on, young—" he began, and then stopped. Sean Ogg looked around. "The scheming minx," said Ridcully to the air in general. "Oh, go back and get it then," she said, "and I fell right for it. Even if I could cut the mustard again, I don't know where we were."
"Sir,"
said Sean. Ridcully shook himself. "What's happening?" he said.
"I don't know," said Sean, who was almost in tears. "I think we're being attacked by elves. Nothing anyone's telling me is making any sense. Somehow they arrived during the entertainment or something."
Ridcully looked around at the frightened, bewildered people.
"And Miss Magrat's gone out to fight them. Alone."
Ridcully looked perplexed. "Who's Miss Magrat?"
"She's going to be queen. The bride. You know, Magrat Garlic."
Ridcully's mind could digest one fact at a time. "What's she gone out for?"
"They captured the king."
"Did you know they've got Esme Weatherwax as well?"
"What, Granny Weatherwax?"
"I came back to rescue her," said Ridcully, and then realised this sounded either nonsense or cowardly. Sean was too upset to notice.
"I just hope they're not collecting witches," he said. "They'll need our mum to get the complete set."
"They ain't got me, then," said Nanny Ogg behind him.
"Mum, how'd you get in?"
"Broomstick. You'd better get some people with bows up on the roof. I came down that way, so can others."
"What are we going to do, Mum?"
"There's bands of elves all over the place," said Nanny, "and there's a big glow over the dancers."
"We must attack them," shouted Casanunda. "Give them a taste of cold steel."
"Good man, that dwarf," said Ridcully. "That's right. I'll get my crossbow." "There's too many of them," said Nanny flatly.
"Granny and Miss Magrat are out there, Mum," said Sean. "Miss Magrat came over all strange and put on armour and went out to fight all of them."
"But the hills are crawling with elves," said Nanny. "It's a double helping of elves with extra devils. Certain death."
It's certain death anyway," said Ridcully. "That's the thing about death. Certainty."
"We'd have no chance at all," said Nanny.
"Actually, we'd have one chance," said Ridcully. "I don't understand all this stuff, but from what young Stibbons says, it means that everything has to happen somewhere, do you see? So that means it could happen here, even if it's a million to one chance, ma'am."
"That's all very well," said Nanny. "But what you're saying is, for every Mr. Ridcully that survives tonight's work, 999,999 are going to get killed."
"Yes, but I'm not bothered about those other buggers," said Ridcully. "They can look after themselves. Serve 'em right for not inviting me to their weddings."
"What?"
Nothing."
Sean was hopping from one foot to the other.
"We ought to be fighting 'em, Mum."
"Look at everyone," said Nanny. "They're dog-tired and wet and confused. That's not an army."
"Mum, Mum, Mum."
"What?"
"I'll psych 'em up, Mum. That's what you have to do before troops go into battle, Mum. I read about that in books. You can take a rabble of thingy and make the right kind of speech and psych them up and turn them into a terrible fighting force, Mum."
"They look terrible anyway."
"I mean, terrible like fierce, Mum."
Nanny Ogg looked at the 100 or so Lancre subjects. The thought of them managing to fight anyone at all took some getting used to.
"You've been studying this, Sean?" she inquired.
"I've got 5 years' worth of bows and ammo, Mum," said Sean reproachfully.
"Well, give it a try, then, if you think it'll work."
Trembling with excitement, Sean climbed onto a table, drew his sword with his good hand, and banged it on planks until people were silent. He made a speech. He pointed out that their king had been captured, and their prospective queen had gone out to save him. He pointed out their responsibility as loyal subjects. He pointed out that other people currently not here but at home hiding under the bed would, after the glorious victory, wish they'd been there too instead of under the aforesaid bed, which they were hiding under. You know, the bed he'd just mentioned. In fact, it was better that there were so few here to face the enemy, because that meant that there would be a higher percentage of honour per surviving head. He used the word glory 3 times. He said that in times to come, people would look back on this day, whatever the date was, and proudly show their scars, at least those who'd survived would show their scars, and be very proud, and probably have drinks bought for them. He advised people to imitate the action of the Lancre reciprocating fox, and stiffen